This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. And guys, I have an amazing interview for you today. This is with Mr. Stephen Kuhn. Stephen is somebody I've been following for a while, but the first time I got to hear him speak was at an event a few months ago called Clever Talks over in San Diego. And that was a conference for U.S. military veterans. Got to hear from a lot of people that day. They had Jocko Willink. They had Donnie O'Malley. They had Evan Hafer. A whole host of really awesome guests. Rudy Reyes. But Stephen Kuhn was the first speaker that day. And his speech absolutely blew me away for a few different reasons. But the primary of which was, he literally just came out and laid it all out there. He wasn't afraid of just trying to make himself look good. He wanted to talk about the mistakes he'd made. He wanted to talk about the pain he'd felt. He wanted to talk about all of the difficulties he'd had. And he wanted to do that because he was truly looking to serve the audience. What I've come to learn about Stephen is that he truly tries to bring value to whatever he does. He's not looking to take, he's looking to give as much as he can. So I wanted to introduce him to you guys because he is somebody that I definitely look up to. And I believe that he's somebody that you guys could learn a whole heck of a lot from. Stephen's a decorated U.S. Army veteran, and he is also a business consultant. And he found a lot of success early on, and then he lost it all. He went from having millions and millions of dollars in business to becoming a doorman. And literally, you know, while he was a doorman, he had people walking up to him saying, "Hey, are you Stephen Kuhn? Like, what's going on, man? Why is this going on? What, you know, are you having some difficulties?" And he was okay with that, and he built himself out of that. He pulled himself out of that situation, rebuilt his business, and was back on top in a short period of time. And the reason is because he's developed a certain sense of confidence. He knows that no matter what happens, he's going to be able to change things and he's going to be able to rebuild. So again, this is a great guy to know, a great guy to listen to. And if you want to learn more about him, and I highly suggest you do, you should head over to www.stephen-kuhn.com. That's STEVEN-KUHN.com. And like I said, he brings value to the table no matter what he does. We'll get you his social media links also later in the show, but you guys are in for a treat here. Just a couple of things before we get into the interview. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. And if this is your first time here, the reason why this podcast exists is to bring veterans tools, tactics, ideas, and to talk about issues that can help them to live their best lives. And it doesn't matter if you're a veteran or if you're not, anything we talk about here could apply to anybody, but we focus on the U.S. military veteran community because there's been a whole heck of a lot of difficulties in that community over the past decade and a half. So what we want to do is we want to create a forum that's just giving to that community. We don't ask for anything in return, but all we do ask is that if you enjoyed the show, if you liked the show, please, number one, share it out with people who could use it. And number two, please write us a review up on iTunes. It really helps to let people know about the show. In addition to that, I also want to thank the people who make this show possible, the good people over at F-Bomb Nutrition. They make delicious packets of macadamia nut butters. Awesome, delicious nut butters that you can take with you anywhere. They're sending packs of this stuff out to the troops overseas so they can supplement their MREs. And if you want to get 20% off your first order of F-Bombs, you can do so at www.dropanfbomb.com. Use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. Like I said, you'll get a 20% discount. Sorry, I know that was a long intro, but I promise you that this interview will be worth it. So with that, I'm going to stop yapping my trap over here, and let's get into this interview with the awesome Stephen Kuhn. Stephen Kuhn, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on. Always an honor.
Absolutely. You know, I had the pleasure of hearing you speak at Clever Talks in San Diego a few months ago. And I have to say that, you know, I went through and sat through a lot of speeches that day, but yours was really, really impactful. Just the personalization and the power of your story really, really got me. And you know, I know you've been through a whole lot. I know that you're a U.S. Army veteran, Gulf War, and you've grown from doorman up to entrepreneur. In everything that you've done, you know, where you're at today, how are you feeling right now?
You know, I like to say, well, I hit my limitless, you know, when everybody thinks they're limitless, I hit that back in 2008 when I completely lost everything, crashed and was homeless. So that's not how I feel, right? How I feel now is at ease, calm, released, receiving. So I look so forward to every single day because I'm excited to see what I get to receive. And so it's more of an attitude of wait and see. Well, actually be active and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel great. I feel good. I feel, you know, I moved into a new house. We live outside of Budapest in Hungary. Oh, wow. We're putting a swimming pool in right now. I got a 4 and a 5 year old kid, nice, beautiful young Hungarian wife, you know, doing well, doing some good business.
You know, I went through something similar a few years ago where I had a business, I completely lost everything, ended up living out of my car. And one of the things I remember from that is the immense fear up until the point I lost everything. And then when I lost everything, I was like, all right, I lost everything. I'm still alive. How did you get over that fear? How did you get through that?
Well, it happened when I was, you know, at the top of my game. So, and we were doing movies, you know, we were producing films in New York and Hollywood and Berlin, Germany. We were doing a co-production and, you know, we were just, you know, rolling in it. We had a mortgage charter with my brother. And I stayed in Europe. So I wasn't too into the business. I did more of the referrals and things like that. But when I crashed and burned, it happened overnight, as you know, from the economic crash. And I felt like someone lifted a stone from my back. It felt like now I can start over and actually be who I'm supposed to be. Because for some reason, society puts you in this path when you start working in the corporate world that you're supposed to be this person or do this thing. And there I was, a little bit overweight, you know, the big car, making all the money, and I just wasn't happy. And then when I lost everything, after the initial shock, of course, right? The next step after the shock is the fear, I can't pay my bills. Yeah. Oh my God, I can't pay my bills. And then it's like, well, shit, I can't pay my bills. I guess I won't pay them, you know? So it's like that simple. And next thing you know, you're being locked out of your own apartment. I was lucky enough to be able to rent it out to somebody, and I was allowed to stay sleep on my sofa once or twice a week. So that was sort of cool. So I sort of had like an attachment to that house, although I didn't really want it. And then I lived in my car and with friends, and it felt great. I don't know how else to put it, but I knew it could only feel great because I knew that I could get out of it whenever I wanted. Like I knew in my mind, I'm not staying here. I don't need to stay here, but right now it's where I am. So enjoy it and see what that feeling is. And like, sort of let it go inside of me. And what does it do to me?
Right. There's also a sense of freedom where, when you lose everything, because you don't have much of anything else to lose. Right.
Yeah. And no responsibilities of trying to take care of it.
Right.
Paying the bills, keeping it up, washing the car, going there, going to work, punching in, but whatever you do, you know, it's like, it's all gone. And suddenly you're just with yourself. You're forced to be with yourself. And I would venture to say that that's where a lot of people lose the curve, when they don't look at themselves, when they look to the outside for like, okay, it's somebody else's fault. Why is this happening only to me? What happened to me? You know, look at society. Why is that guy rich and not me? That kind of stuff. And see, I never saw myself, not once, as a victim. And I would said, I'm here because of me. So I can only get out because of me. And because I knew me, I knew I could get out.
Right. Exactly. I caused this. I put myself into this situation, mm-hmm. and then my actions can take me out of it.
Exactly. And when you think logically like that, everything seems to be okay. Yeah.
Now you said, you just said you knew yourself, right? And so when you're sitting there, what were you thinking? Okay, my next step is this. I'm going to do X. What did you do? What was your thought process?
Well, how am I going to do this? So I was in a, we'll go through it. All right. So I was in a toxic relationship, right? Mm-hmm. So, and right after I became homeless, I sort of like hung out with her and she didn't know and this kind of stuff. Then she found out and she was really mean and nasty and stuff. And so I lived with her for a little bit. And we went to this episode, which I spoke about, Clever Talks, for the first time in my life ever. Mm-hmm. I told that story for the first time on stage. And that was about the time where I was with her in a car. And we were fighting as usual because she was, you know, she would just treat me like dirt and I was putting up with it because I guess I needed that. And she was calling me names and I don't know, called me a loser or something in front of her 9-year-old daughter. I told her to get out of the car. She got out of the car. I floored it and I ran right into a speed trap from the German police. And they pulled me out of the car. And here I am, 6'4", 280, crying like a baby, snot running out of my nose. And these guys, these like 9 cops are like, what the hell's going on with you? What, you know, and then, lo and behold, my ex-girlfriend and her daughter walk up and she's yelling, he's a war criminal, put him in jail, he killed people, and just like horrible things. And I sort of lost it and I grabbed the weapon of the police officer standing beside me, which was a small girl, a small woman. And they sort of like pushed my hand down onto the weapon and not try to pull it away. I guess they're trained for that or something. I don't know. And the girlfriend was saying, do it, do it. Now, I don't know if she thought that I wanted to kill myself or I wanted to shoot her. I don't know what she thought, but she said, do it. Me personally, I wanted to, you know, do it to myself. And the little girl police officer turned to me and said, you don't want to do this. This is not you, right? I know you. I was like, whoa, what the heck? Sort of shocked me when she said that. So that stopped everything. They took my girlfriend away. And then they basically, long story short, they took my license to my car and I could walk home, which was only 10, 20 minutes away. So I walked home, got there, and I was like, what the heck am I doing? I'm an idiot, you know? Mm-hmm. And I went in my room, pulled out my picture of myself in the Army, my 8x10, put it down nice and neat against the door. And on top of the door, I hung my uniform. And I straightened my uniform out, checked the awards to make sure they were all straight and everything. And then I pulled out the Marine K-bar, the knife. And I put it to my neck, and I was going to cut my neck. And I saw on the blade, there was an engraved statement about me because it was a gift. And it was the first time I'd ever seen that, which made me stop and look at the engraving on the blade. And at that moment, someone knocked on the door. I was like, I can't even kill myself, man. This is ridiculous. So yeah, it's crazy. You know, you have thoughts like that. You know, that's how indifferent I was, you know? So I went to the door, I opened it, and there was this police woman in civilian clothes. And I had the knife in my hand. She came in, held my hand, sort of like pushed it down, took the knife out of my hand and placed it down in one swoop. And led me with my own hand into my own living room and sat there. And she told me, this is not you. I was at one of your readings because I had written a book in Germany that was a bestseller. And she said, this is not you. At one of your readings, you're going to get married, you're going to have kids, and you're going to spread love throughout the world. You're going to have an amazing life. This is not you. You don't need to do this. And I'm like, what the fuck is she doing here? You know? And then she got up and left and she walked out. And to this day, I don't know if it was real or not. I don't. Wow. But all I do know is it stopped me, right? Mm-hmm. And at that moment, I called my friend Michael. And I said, Michael, either you come and get me or I'm not going to be here tomorrow. I just know it.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the bottom of the bottom for me.
Yeah. When I heard that at Clever Talks, I was like, wow. That's and you were talking about this concept that you have called relational capital.
Right.
And when you think about it, relational capital in terms of this, I mean, there's two forms of relational capital that saved you that day. Number one, the inscription on the knife, because somebody there put yep. something there because you had done something for them.
Right.
And then this woman, whether she was real or not real, she had been impacted by what you said, and that created something that brought her to your aid.
Yeah. And that's exactly why I spoke about relational capital in the beginning, is that when we invest, just like we invest in you know, financial capital, when we invest in relational capital, meaning I help you, I'm not looking for a direct return from you, but I'm expecting a return in one way or the other, right? Because that's the way of the universe. The good thing about relational capital is there's no risk,
right?
Right. You don't lose anything. So it's a complete without expectation. When I help you, I help you because I want to, because I can, because I'm able, because I'm capable. And I just know in the faith and the certainty that I'm going to get that back, but I'm not worried about it. It's sort of without expectations. And that's where sort of that goes. We're going backwards now, but that's where HIT sort of begins. Is HIT is my, you know, my core principles, is honesty, integrity, and transparency. And the way that came about was when I wrote my book and I was on TV and I was forced to answer questions that I'd never been asked to ask before. And there was 15 million viewers on there watching me talk about the first Gulf War, which is what I wrote about, and my experiences there. So I suddenly was faced with questions about, do you support this new war? And I'm sitting there going, okay, I'm a patriot. I'm a war veteran. If I say no, how am I going to look like in front of these people? And if I say yes, what are the Germans going to think of me? And I'm thinking all these things like, what do they expect of me? Mm-hmm. You know, and I thought, wait a second, this is about me, right? Not about anybody else. So I said, I got to be honest with myself. And I was honest with myself and said, I don't support this war. Not at all. I said, I'm a patriot. I love my country. I respect the office of the POTUS, President of the United States. But at the time, I don't support what they're doing. So I communicated that transparently. That's where the transparency comes. So my honesty I had with myself, and transparency is the way I communicate that honesty. And the byproduct, which I felt after saying that in front of 15 million people, was a solid, deep-rooted integrity in my word. And that's where HIT came from: honesty, integrity, transparency. And I felt it in the moment that I did it, that I said it, that I freed myself from any sort of expectation of what I thought they wanted to hear or what I thought I should say. And that's where this expectation, freeing yourself and expectation, comes from, as well as when you invest in relational capital without expectation. It's amazing, because expectations are there to make you sad, to make you upset, to make you, you know, if you have an expectation, you either verbalize it or you don't have it.
Right.
Otherwise, right. You'd be disappointed, right? So, yeah.
Exactly. And this concept of honesty, integrity, transparency, if you look at the world today, and the way people conduct themselves, it seems like there's so many people out there who have a fear of being honest, being truly honest, who have a fear of being really having integrity. And it seems like it's almost naturally ingrained into a lot of leaders out there, so-called leaders, because they're trying to protect themselves. It's out of fear. How did you get over that fear? Did it happen early on, or did it happen was there a certain point where you said, was it that interview that you went on and spoke about it? Or was it, you know, did you say, wait a minute, I have power here. If I'm honest, there's power.
It's funny you say that, because when I was growing up, I wasn't happy with myself. I didn't like myself. We grew up in a typical American nightmare, mobile home, the whole works, right? So abusive stepfathers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I left for the army, not because my entire my family was in the military, like back to the 1700, back to the Revolutionary War, but because I wanted to get out. And I knew, and I was 19 years old when I left, I knew that I could only ever change if I changed my surroundings. Like, I knew that then, because I had tried to change, be a better person, be a different person, not be the knucklehead, the loser, the chubby, whatever I was. And every time you try to be different, no one would let you be different, right? They don't want to see you change. No one wants to see you be different, because you're going to make them face themselves. And most people don't want that. So I left for the military. And as soon as that razor touched my head, I realized this is my new uniform, right? This is my new me. And one day we went through the obstacle course in boot camp in Fort Knox, Kentucky, in July or August, maybe. I think it was July 2000 or 1986. And, I couldn't make it over that wall. You know, I couldn't get over the wall, you know, that obstacle course wall. Mm-hmm. And the drill sergeant threw me in the mud, put his foot in the back of my neck, and was calling me all kinds of names under the sun. and I lost it. I completely freaked, like, you know, exploded and just jumped over that wall like a gazelle. Like it didn't even, wasn't even there. And I said to myself, holy shit, this is power, man. Like I just thought it was all in my head. All this time and my whole childhood, you know, flashed through my, cause I sucked at football. I sucked at baseball. I sucked at everything I tried. I was really bad at it. And that's because I had zero belief in myself. Right. And suddenly I was Superman. Right. That was my first step of about honesty with myself, that I was never honest to myself, that I didn't believe in myself, that I didn't care about myself, that I didn't love myself. I wasn't even interested in who I was. I was trying to be someone on the outside because that's what society says we're supposed to be. That's where most people are stuck. So I was forced in a moment where it was either literally do or die to actually face who I was and say, you know what, I'm going to go past this. And I did it subconsciously, but I was conscious of it after it happened. And that's the key point, is I learned that lesson. I literally knew that moment I stopped, the whole world froze and angels came. It was like, I know this is history being made, right? Like, I know this has changed my life forever right now. So take it in, brother. You know, it was like, it was mm-hmm. like that. And this is boot camp, you know, I'm 19 years old. Who thinks like that when they're 19, you know? So it's like, it was really weird to me that to this day, I remember it like it's like I could smell the dirt. I could taste the mud, you know? So most people that I meet there, and I work with a lot of people because I'm a consultant, but as you probably know, as a coach, that people say, I have a business problem. My sales team isn't working or I'm not making revenue. That's what they think the problem is. Typically the problem is the leader of the company. And it's not because they're doing something wrong. It's because they don't know what they don't know. Right. Exactly. So we help them know what they don't know, and we get them where they want to go, make them a little bit of money. Then they're relaxed. And we can work with them with, you know, that knowing, getting to know what they don't know. So the fear of not knowing who you are, I think it's because people are scared to face who they are. They're scared. They're not going to be who they think they're supposed to. I have relatives like that.
Yeah.
Super successful, amazing. And they're not being who they are.
Well, do you think, cause you're somebody who's hit rock bottom and you've right. come back up and you've done it a couple of times when you don't go through something like that and the world doesn't show you who you are, because essentially that's what it is. When you hit rock bottom, it's the world showing you who you are. Do you think somebody has to go through that? And if they don't go through that, are they not experiencing what they need to experience in order to become who they truly need to be?
Well, the easy answer is yes. You know, it's, they should go through. I mean, if you haven't gone through it, if you don't see the dark, how do you see the light? You know, that's what most people say, but it's all relative, isn't it? You know, I was after I got back from the Gulf War, I landed in Rheinmann Air Base and the Sergeant Major came up and said, "Hey, Sergeant Kuhn, I got a job for you." I was like, "I just got back." You know, I said it to myself, of course. And I was like, "What does he want from me now?" He said, "You're going to be marching in the victory parades in New York City and Washington, D.C. I was like, "What? Whoa." So I went to D.C. and we're marching down the street. And that was, you know, a typical military parade, six across the front, you know, I don't know, 300 deep or whatever we were. I was calling cadence for the entire division. That was cool. Then we went to New York and it was a Charlie Foxtrot. So clusterfuck, right? The streets were narrow. People were coming in. Crew girls were showing us their breasts and stuff. And we ended up being too wide in the front. Right. And there was a Vietnam veteran came and said, "Oh, you guys don't know what war is. You know, you have no idea. You guys were there for, you know, a couple months." And I was like, first of all, I said, "Come on, come here, brother, march with us." So I grabbed him and we were marching with him, you know? And then later we were talking and I said, "Look, man, that was my Vietnam. Like, I don't want to know what Vietnam was like. I can't know. And I don't want to know what it was like. That was bad enough for me." And he's like, yeah, I get it. So it's all relative, isn't it? So what's bad for you might not be bad for me. Might not be bad for someone else. For me, the worst thing that I had was in the war when I lost my friend in my arms. Second personal, you know, sort of crushing moment that I had was being homeless. But it wasn't crushing once I realized that was just my ego. It was just what I thought that I couldn't be. That's just what I thought society. I mean, I actually got a job as a doorman at the age of 40 after I was homeless. And I was standing on the door and I had friends who knew me as this big, because at that time I was doing TV in Germany. I was a best-selling author. I was a director of a big company. And then I lost it all. And there I was on the door like 2 months later and people say, "Hey, see what's going on?" I'm like, "Hey man," they said, "You coming in?" I'm like, "No, I work here." And they're like, "What? Oh my God, what's wrong with you? What happened?" And they were completely embarrassed and like, "Steve, you can't work here. What are you doing, man?" And I was like, "Well, dude, go in and have fun, relax." You know, they were more worried about how they looked talking to me as the doorman than I was as a doorman who lost everything. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
But that's society.
they're projecting their fear onto you. That's exactly what's going on. That's that's insane. Now, we talked a little bit about this, but we're seeing a trend toward plant medicines to try to bring yourself to this type of fear. And I've had experience with these quite a bit. And I know you recently went on a journey yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, I've been working with plant medicine for 14 years, ayahuasca to be specific, and in the last 4 years now with San Pedro as well.
Oh, wow.
I also worked with Iboga one time, never again. And of course, a little bit of rapé here and there doesn't hurt. You know, so the first time I ever worked with ayahuasca was in 2007, maybe six or seven. And it was in Berlin. And the only reason I did it is because I was talking to a friend who was a German and was a McKinsey consultant in London, making $25,000 a month and just doing really well and collected bourbon and all kinds of stuff, like, you know, the typical societal guy. And he did one session in London, quit his job the next day, took his money, removed to the Amazon, invested in living there, and ended up living with the shamans and learning their trade and going into the jungle for 2 years and actually doing the shaman trip. So he lived by himself in the jungle for 2 years and went through the whole journey and stuff. And now he travels the world as a shaman. He's like the Western specialist. And I said, look, I can't get it out of my head that I'm going broke. This is before I went broke. I can't get it out of my head. I feel like I'm going broke. I'm always worried about money. He goes, come, let's do a session. I'm like, what? So in a session, I asked never to worry about money again, to always have enough, right? Which sounds great, right? Well, I said the wrong words. I should have had more. I should have said more, but I said enough. So I only ever had enough. But then I went broke, like I told you, and I lost everything. And I think that session was what helped me through being homeless, because I said, okay, I have enough. Like, I'll always have enough. Because the certainty, see, one thing about ayahuasca is that people forget is it's not a recreational drug, okay? This is therapy. Anybody who goes on an ayahuasca trip and they're talking about vomiting and, you know, all this kind of stuff, that means they didn't prepare. There's a 2 week preparation you have to go through when you do the session. Mm-hmm. And it's about what you eat, what you don't eat, what you can put in your body, what you put on your body, and that kind of stuff. And when you're prepared, I've 14 years, probably 30 times I've worked with ayahuasca. I vomited one time, and that was last year because I was so deep in a session I just went deeper than deep. And we use such small dosages that it's only to facilitate your own powers, your own energies. So we don't go to that, you know, they call it ayahuasca tourism. We don't do that at all. We actually have our own. I have my own journeys now in Peru, going in 15 days again to Peru. So ayahuasca is so powerful because that's the feminine, right? That's the feminine energy. That's the yin, so to say. And that's the airy stuff. That's how you see where you're going, what you're doing, your visions. And then San Pedro is the cactus, which is the masculine, right? They call ayahuasca the mother. They call San Pedro the father, right? And Iboga is the grandfather. I'll tell you why in a minute. But San Pedro is the exact opposite. It grounds you. It makes you, if you're working with ayahuasca and you're not working with San Pedro, man, you're missing. You're missing the entire other, you're missing the yang of the yin.
Wow.
And I didn't know that until about 4 years ago. And I can tell you what, that changed everything in my life and my business and my relationship with my kids, my wife, myself. It changed everything because it's the certainty. Now look, when we go there, we talk about mission and certainty. Sissy, what's up? Oh, beautiful. Nice. Yes. Sorry, my daughter's here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it. Yes, I see when you pull it out.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Good job. Okay. Close the door. Thanks, boo-boo. Yeah, sorry. That's one thing I never do is tell my kids to go away. So that's just one of those things I always do. So so the thing we work on is when we go on these retreats, this time we're going with six people, we go with the mission of creating certainty and finding your purpose. So, and I don't mean like guys, you know, cool, groovy. I'm talking, what's your purpose in life to be abundant and make money and change the world? Affect the world, impact the world. What is it, right? And how do you create certainty? Because you have belief, you have faith, right? And then comes certainty. And certainty is when you know something's happening, you don't have to think about it. It doesn't matter how it's going to happen. You don't even worry about it because you know it's going to happen. Like, it's going to rain, forget about it. I'm not going to worry about it. It's going to rain. That's certainty. And when you have that kind of certainty in your life about business, my man, when you have certainty about that in your relationships, you can't even imagine the load off your back.
Yeah.
And the way you can live and the energy and the power that you have to give others and invest in that relational capital all the time, because you're wasting zero energy on the shit that doesn't matter.
Right.
It's amazing, man. It's amazing. And that's what we work on.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. You'd mentioned a bogaine, and every person I've ever heard taking a bogaine says never again. Do you want to describe that at all? Or
yeah, sure. They call it the grandfather. It's a truth root, and it comes from Africa, and the Africans say you only take it twice in life, and that's when you hit puberty, mm-hmm. and right before you die, right? And here we are using it as a therapy. And what iboga is typically used for is for people that are on hard narcotics, trying to get off hard narcotics. I'm not on hard narcotics. So I took a very small dose of it. And they call it the truth root because it makes you face yourself, right? And man, did it ever make me face myself. And it was annoying to no end, because you had this dialogue with yourself for about 6 hours. So everything I said, I had an answer to myself. Didn't matter what thought I had another answer to myself immediately. Like, I'd be thinking, like, man, I wonder if it's going to rain. What do you think? It was like back and forth like that. It was driving me mad. But then I had to embrace it. The thing about plant medicine, you have to embrace what comes, even if you die. Right. Because what's dying is not you. That's the bad energy. It's the bad memories. It's the bad, whatever it is. The vibrations are raising or whatever. So I know it sounds all hokey, but check this out. I consult some very big people. Politicians, party heads, in Europe, and Fortune 500, London stock market, NASDAQ, and they've all done ayahuasca with me.
Mm. Wow.
And so you got to realize we're not hippies. We're right. People that have realized we're, so you have two types of people that typically the world knows. Those that are full on spiritual, and they have they wear gowns and headbands, and they have tattoos, and they're like, oh, kumbaya, my Lord, that kind of stuff. And they're broke as hell. Like, I have no money at all. Right. Or you have the other side. They're completely corporate or business oriented and have no connection to the spiritual, metaphysical, any kind of world at all. Right. So you have those two people basically, right? In between, you have a bunch of people that are a little bit here, a little bit there, but you rarely have someone who has the far left and the far right, as far as full corporate and full spiritual. I'm not saying I'm that, but that's the gap that I bridge. No, so I go in and I use the knowledge and the certainty that I gained through the ayahuasca to make a lot of money, mm-hmm. and to help people make a lot of money. And when I work with my clients, I have immediate impact revenue program, which is a group program. And I have immediate impact consulting, which is my private consulting. I find money in hours, not in months. I have a client in Texas, just as an example. My client in Texas is a roofer. We found $250,000 in his first hours. He was like, holy shit, man, I can pay you in advance. I'm like, well, I hope so. And it's these kind of things that I people talk all the time about masterminds, right? I'm sorry, I'm rambling on, but I love this conversation. Okay. People talk about masterminds all the time. And when I say mastermind, people think, oh, it's a meeting of some guy, you pay, you go, you learn, right? So mm-hmm. what a mastermind really is, and this was done by either Napoleon Hill or Walt. Napoleon Hill or Wallace Wattles. Well, I forget which one it said, but the mastermind is this. You have one person that comes, and you have the other person that comes. And when you give yourself freely without expectations to each other, a third entity is formed. That's the mastermind. And you come away with solutions that either one of you alone would have never have gotten. And that's how I connect with my clients. So we come up with solutions for their businesses that me alone or them alone can never come up with. And so it's specifically unique to each business owner. So they walk away with a solution going, holy man, this is my personal tailored solution. And it sounds spiritual, but it's completely not spiritual. And that's the part of HIT where the no expectations come in again. Being a HIT person is real simple. You show up wholly and fully without expectations, without a preconceived notion, without a pre-designed solution to the person in front of you. Like when I show up to my consulting, I'm like, hey man, what's up? What's going on? What are you feeling like today? That's how I start. I don't go, well, let's go to a checklist here and go to, that kind of stuff. And because I know how to touch my vulnerability, I know how to go deep and actually share with you my truths. You share with me your truths. You see, we fill the space that we're given like goldfish, right? Just like we're doing now. This isn't scripted. We don't know where we're going. This is being created. And these words coming out of my mouth and what's coming out of your mouth, they're not words that I ever would have came up with my own, on my own by myself. Why would I? Right? Right. So this mastermind that we're creating is something pretty special.
It's completely social. And that's a good metaphor for the plant medicine, as far as coming to it open and ready to hear the truth.
Yeah. And embracing whatever comes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to talk a little more about that. But one more thing I wanted to ask you, because when I went on my own plant medicine journey, I haven't done ayahuasca yet. I did a DMT, which is more like a rocket ship compared to the same active ingredient, but more like a rocket ship.
Right.
The thing I really took away from that was that it put me in a place to where I basically was told to stop worrying so much about everything, right?
Yeah.
Told me to just stop. And then it told me, don't come back until you're ready, right? It said, don't come back here. Because the first thing it was like, I'm immediately surrounded by these things. And then all of a sudden they're like, why are you here? And then I kind of communicated that. And I was like, and they were like, all right, we're gonna show you this, but it's one more time. And then don't come back until you're ready. Do you believe that this is coming from another dimension? Do you think that it's in our minds, or do you think it's something else? Because when you actually do it, you literally feel like you're somewhere else, and that you're surrounded by something.
Well, there's a literal gland in our body, in our head. It's called the pineal gland. Mm-hmm. That's the third eye, basically. Right. So the third eye, which is the eye that sees things that are here every day that we don't see with our normal eyes, basically that's what it is. So it's just awareness, isn't it? So it's you, polishing your pineal gland, opening up. That's what ayahuasca does. It also activates that like crazy. Your third eye opens up. So you see things that are here. I mean, look, if you look back in history, they've been using ayahuasca for 1,000 years or whatever it's been. If you look at the American indigenous tribes, they use peyote, among other things. This is real things. They use ayahuasca in churches with babies still in South America. And that allows you to release. We cannot force ourselves to release because we are, a cognitive race. We think all the time. And when you're on the plant medicine, it allows you to stop thinking and simply to receive. Mm-hmm. And when you receive, it's like a radio antenna. You don't know what you're going to receive until it comes to you, right? And now this is where the medicine is important, because if you would receive without being prepared with the medicine, you would be like, what is this? And you'd probably block it off. So that's why for me, it's always important to explain to people, go. And it's funny to see the people go with us because they're business people. Mm-hmm. The business, very successful multimillionaire business people that aren't looking for a trip. They're not looking for a gag. They're not looking to go there and wear white clothes and be all sort of, hokey and stuff. They want to find certainty in what their purpose is in life, because it can't be just about making money. There's got to be something else. And this is, until you get to that point, sometimes people won't allow themselves to believe there is something else, because like you said, it's fear. Right. Like, what if I find out I'm with the wrong woman? What if I find out I'm in the wrong job? What if I find out the relationships that I have in the past were complete flukes? People worry about this stuff, and so they stay away from it. And so there's a lot of facing the truth that you have to do before you even begin with the medicine.
Yeah.
Because you got to be prepared for what happens,
Yeah.
I mean, I had my buddy did it. He came home and left his girlfriend and went and just left and said, I love you, but we're not supposed to be together. Like completely, logical.
Just cut it off.
What are you talking about? Yeah, just cut it off. So look, we can't be together. I'm bad for you, or whatever. She was bad for him, whatever it said. I don't remember. But, that was it. It's completely like nope, done. Amazing.
Yeah. That's definitely something I'll never look at drugs in the same way ever again, because
that's the thing, isn't it? People call it drugs, people call it medicine, people call it plant medicine, whatever it is. I don't know. I try not to call it anything. I call it sacred plants. Mm-hmm. Because in the end, the thing that's hard about it, I had a call on Saturday with one of my biggest clients. I did $1 billion in sales last year, and he said, what are you doing in May? I said, I'm going to Peru. He said, what are you doing in Peru? I said, I'm working with ayahuasca in San Pedro. He's like, what, you? You're a business guy. I'm like, well, yeah. That's why I'm so damn good. He's like, "What? Well, are you going in to get high?" I'm like, "You don't get high. It's not getting high. It's not tripping. It's not chilling out and being cool. It's work, man. It's 10 days of hard work with yourself and crying and being upset and letting go of things that you cherish and love, only to have them come back and love you even more." So these are the kind of things that I go through when we're down there, and we facilitate this with the indigenous tribe down there that's actually the descendants of the Incans. And the even cooler thing is, where this compound is, it's a compound ran by a South African family called the Meibergs. They've been there for 25 years. And when they built their compound, it was built at the top of Cusco, which is the oldest city in the Americas. And after that, they found the entire ruins of the Incan Empire. So guess where we do our ceremonies? Right on top of the Temple of the Moon, where the thrones are, where the sacrificial stones are. It's all right there. So if spirituality and proximity mean anything to you, that's the place you got to do it.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, it's incredible.
That's got to be amazing.
It is. And then we take the train to Machu Picchu, right? So we go to Machu Picchu for a day, and we go to Pisac, to the market. We do a little bit of touristy stuff as well. Sometimes horseback, we go to Glacier Mountain, that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. It is. So another question for you here, because, you know, what you do in business, I mean, it takes a lot of skill in understanding people and understanding not only people's thoughts and goals, but also their motives, what drives them, where they want to go, and how in the bigger picture of what's holding them back, right? What is your superpower, if you were to say what it was, and how did you develop it and hone it?
I think my superpower is to be able to relate and connect with anyone. Mm-hmm. And what that does is puts them at ease and allows them to their creative juices to flow together to create that mastermind I was talking about. The way I did that was I realized at a really early stage that I had special talents if I let go. And I was not scared of failing. So that was my biggest thing. So when I walked up to Mick Jagger and said, "I'm your new bodyguard," because I wanted to, he believed me and I got the job. Right. So, and then when I walked up to Andrea Bocelli and I said, "You need me." He's like, "Why?" And I told him why. And I said, "I want a retainer." And he laughed at me, and I walked away with a retainer and 20%. That's because I didn't have any fear. Like, I knew that whoever I'm in front of, if they open up to me, we're going to create something amazing. And that's because I have faith in, I don't know, whatever it is, a cosmos or universe or the source or whatever you want to call it, that when you give yourself freely and openly and wholly, then it comes back to you, period. So investing relational capital, the entire thing, hit, you know, that whole sort of letting go of no expectations. So I think that the connection that I have with anybody that I work with, when I walk into a room, I'm able to do it in a way where I get noticed very quickly because I'm only giving. I go to networking, which I hate, but I go to networking events, speaking. For instance, at Clever Talks, a perfect example. I walked in to the whole event, and the first thing I did is I went to every single vendor, and I shook their hand, said, "What do you do? How you doing?" Second day, I went back, said, "Hey, what's your number one problem? Let me solve it for you." For nothing. So they knew who I was. They saw me again. "Hey, Steve, welcome back." See, you invest in them. You give them more. You make them feel better than when you met them. So when you leave, say bye, they're feeling better than when they met you. Every single time. I call that your life enterprise. So, you know, if you look at a CEO in an enterprise, business enterprise, he or she is has to answer to one person, and that's the stakeholder, right? Stakeholders, you know. And in our life, if we're the CEO of our own life enterprise, and most of us should be fired, we're the CEO of our life enterprise, we go around, everyone we meet is a stakeholder in our life because they have an influence over us. So we better treat them good. We better elevate them. We better make them feel better when they leave us as when they see us. And when you do that, everyone wants to be with you. Everyone wants to work with you. Everyone wants to see you. And you do it because it's good for you as well, not just for them.
I'm asking this because we've got a lot of young combat veterans who listen to this show and who are out there. They're trying to figure out their way in this world. When did you know that entrepreneurship was your path? Like, was it always something that you wanted to do? Did it start at a very young age, or was there a moment?
Well, back when I was, you know, growing up, the entrepreneurship wasn't even a word. It was there, but no one used it. You know, you were self-employed, or you were a contractor, or, you know what I mean? Or you were employed, or you owned a business, or you're a restaurateur, all these words, but entrepreneurship and the label and all the coolness about it wasn't there. All I knew is when I got out of the Army, I never wanted to work for anybody again. And I didn't directly. Of course, you do as a contractor, as a consultant, you work for people all the time, but just on your own terms. And so when I first got out of the Army, I got out and did a European out and stayed in Europe. So I got out in Berlin and I opened a cocktail bar, right? Then another one, then a nightclub and all this kind of stuff. And not the nicest business to be in, if you know what I mean, but great cash flow, you know? And I think I never saw myself as an entrepreneur or whatever, but this is the point. As an entrepreneur doesn't mean you do one thing and you do it forever and do it good. An entrepreneur means you fight your ass off to make sure whatever it is that you're doing is working. And that means that you have to be open to what it develops into, because your goal may be to be an entrepreneur, make this much money and to open up this, that, and the other. But when you're presented with opportunities that can change your whole business plan for the better, and it could also take you in a direction that's even more advantageous, easier to scale, less work or whatever, you have to be able to have the belief in yourself, right? And the flexibility to actually move, shoot, and communicate in that direction, if you will.
Right.
And that's where, for me, a true entrepreneur is someone who can let go of what they think that they have to do. Because often, you will never figure out alone how to get to the end. You will never figure it out alone. You won't. That's why there's coaches. That's why there's consultants. That's why there's mentors. That's why there's online courses. That's why there's TV shows. That's why there's all these trainings in there. Because you don't know, like I said in the beginning, what you don't know.
Right. Yeah, it seems like there's so many people out there who just take the solopreneur route and they think that the solopreneur route is the way to go. They don't want to depend on anybody. They don't want help from anybody. And if you do that, there's such a big danger of getting tunnel vision or sticking yourself into a place where you're painting yourself into a corner because you're not getting outside perspective.
Well, let me give you an example. There's nothing wrong with being a solopreneur. You're very flexible that way, right? But you're also very vulnerable, like you said. So, you know, being an entrepreneur, solopreneur, whatever you want to call it, the key thing is, how will you grow your business if you're by yourself? It's almost impossible. Number two is the way to grow your business quickest is with collaborations, right? Or partnerships. Collaborations are better because you don't have to form a third entity, pay taxes, all that kind of stuff. You simply say, let's work together and split the profits. Mm-hmm. Right. So for instance, you know, I have a new product that I'm releasing called the Immediate Impact Revenue Program. It's a group consulting program. On Tuesdays, we have a special forces veteran who teaches high performance mindset and force optimization in your business. Wednesdays, you have a hot seat with me where I find immediate revenue in your business. Thursdays, we have business professionals coming in to teach, like Tim Story is coming in to teach. We got Evan Carmichael said he's going to come in and teach. We got Roland Fraser is going to come in and teach. All these big names coming in to teach the students. And then on Fridays, we have the business and body mindset with a professional coach, fitness coach from the UK. Now, all of these things are included in this program. But the biggest thing that everybody gets from this program is the other entrepreneurs, the collaboration opportunities. So I can teach whatever I want and we can have the coolest people in there, but you're going to get the most value out of the other entrepreneurs for your everyday business. So a solopreneur is great, but you need to belong to a group of other solopreneurs so you can work with each other.
Right.
As an example, Vet TV, right? Vet TV. That's
Donnie O'Malley.
Donnie O'Malley, right. Yeah. So they're sitting there at Clever Talks and they're talking about, yeah, we need to get this word out. And they were going to hire me as a consultant, which they didn't do, but they were going to hire me as a consultant. And I'm sitting there going, well, what's the problem? Why can't you get more subscribers? Yeah, we need more mails and stuff. I'm like, put Black Rifle Coffee in your movie and ask them to send out an email to their 1 million subscribers. Do the same thing with Gruntstyle and you're good to go. Done. Okay. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay. It's a collaboration. It's a collaboration. It's simple as that. They win, they get spots in his film, you know, they get to join Gruntstyle and you see those Gruntstyle t-shirts in their film anyway now,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And then you have Black Rifle Coffee in their films and then there you go. They send out an email. Let's say they each have maybe 500,000 subscribers for their t-shirts and for their coffee. You know, you can probably go from 10%, 50,000 people sign up. You think that's good? Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And then if you're splitting profits, that's like, you know, you're getting advertising without forking anything out, right?
You're making money. You're getting advertising and you're making money. So, exactly. And this is what people forget. Everybody's so worried. Like, that's mine. It's mine. I can't share. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, that kind of stuff. And when I'm launching my program now, I have friends all over the place and have massive mailing lists of a million people. They're sending it out for me for free because they love what I've done for them. I've helped them. I helped them build their business. I've helped them fix problems, things like that. Relational capital, right? Now it's coming back. They're like, Steve, we'll send it out. Not a problem.
That's you great. Know?
So, yeah. So, and this is why I find that anybody who's, look, first of all, competition, the thought of competition is scarcity mindset. That means I have to hide something, hold something, beat someone. That's scarcity mindset. There's nothing wrong with healthy competition. But when you stop being fully, giving full value to your world around you because you're scared someone's going to steal your idea, scarcity. Scared, scarcity. So, and people forget about that sometimes. They go, I can't, well, they're my competition. Yeah, man, give more.
Yeah.
Give more.
That's the thing. When you come into, particularly in today's business world, you know, the way things are online, if you come into that with a scarcity mindset, you're holding yourself off from so many revenue streams, potential revenue streams, so many ways to do it that are going to be so much easier than just trying to hoard everything and trying to protect everything and going crazy that way.
Well, that's the competition mind. And then you have the other scarcity mindset is which I need this, I need this, I need this.
Right.
That's also scarcity mindset. Like when you go to a meeting and you have to close the sale, and they're going to feel it and you're not going to close the sale. Yeah. That's why you go with no expectation. That's why you go and create that mastermind.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You don't go in, I got to close the sale. I got the closing techniques. You want, you know, the alternate close and then the line down the middle. And, you know, the all these different kinds of closes that we learned when we, like 25 years ago when I was coming up in sales, they don't work anymore. Mirror and match. And, you know, they want to see you are there for them. Maybe a bit vulnerable. And my superpower, what you're talking about before, my superpower is I can stay vulnerable longer than anybody else. I can stay underwater, naked, by myself, in a boardroom, longer than anybody else. You can go at me all day long. Nobody, and I will never flare up. Like, I will stay in that humble, vulnerable, powerful place that most people call fear.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, you have young children.
Yes.
How are you teaching them this stuff, or are you introducing this stuff to them now? Oh, and if so,
all day.
How are you introducing it to them?
Well, I love it. You know, I'm 52 next month, and my wife's 31, and my kids are turning 4 and 5. So it's a long stretch in between us all. And I started when they were babies. When they get up in the morning, or when I go to bed at night, usually both times, I'll give them a little sermon. Right? And says, you are who you want to be. You can be anyone you want to be. You're not better than anybody else, and no one's better than you. Right? Do you understand? Do you understand this? Yes, I understand, Poppy. They don't understand, but whatever. You know, they're getting to it, right? And then we talk about how does it feel? What do you feel like right now? And what are the things that you see when you go to sleep? What are the things you see when you wake up? And we just go into this whole metaphysical kind of thing. So I want them to be aware, and I tell them every day, your mission today is to have as much fun as possible. That's why you're here. You're a child. That's why you're here. And when you have fun, you include other people in that fun and you respect those other people. So when they go to school, am I kidding? My son walks in the classroom, the entire class stops. Next, they all run to him. And the teachers are like, what are you teaching these kids? They're so polite and so loving and so nice. You know, and it's, and people say, well, yeah, you're going to be vulnerable. You know, he's going to be, you know, a wimp or whatever. And I'm like, no, do I look like a wimp? I'm 6'4", 80. And you know, I can hold my own. I'm not worried about it. I'm not teaching him to be a softie. I'm teaching him to respect other people. I'm teaching him to invest in that, who he is, and allow that to develop. And so, yeah, I'm teaching them that every single day. My daughter, amazing child, is a helper like no one I've ever seen at 4 years old. You know, she's always helping somebody, always opening doors, trying to open doors anyway. Always saying thank you and please and you're welcome and just being a real chatterbox. And of course, everyone's proud of their kids. But I consciously make an effort to talk to them about the things that matter in life that I learned when I was 40, 45, and 50. And if I can teach them that now, can you imagine?
Yeah.
The power they're going to have as a human being, the clarity they're going to have. Man, I just can't even. It gives me goosebumps.
That's amazing. At this age you're at now, 52. right? Looking back, and I ask this as kind of a selfish question on my part because I'm turning 40 next month. So
what day? What's your birthday?
May the 18th.
Okay, I'm 30th. May 30th.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So you're a Gemini, right?
Yep.
Gemini. And I'm Taurus. So
oh, you're just Taurus.
Taurus going on Gemini. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, the reason I ask this is because you know, when I was a kid, 40 seemed like it was ancient, right? And I remember day I got in the Marine Corps, day I got to my unit in the Marine Corps, I was 19 years old. I see this guy is he's a master sergeant. No, he was a first sergeant. And I'm looking at him and he looked like he was about, to me at the time, 60 something years old, right? And he's like hunched over, he's smoking a cigarette and everything like that. And I learned later on he was only about 38. and now I'm about to turn 40 and I still feel like I'm very young.
Yeah.
Looking back, was there a point where you thought, do you feel older now? Or do you feel like you still have the energy you did when you were in your 20s? What's it like?
Well, when I was 35, 36, 37, that's when I was at my, you know, my peak of my horribleness. I felt really old. Everything hurt. I was chubby. I felt like I was getting old. I was missing out, you know. And now I wake up every single day and I'm so happy to receive. I'm excited every day to wake up. Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm creating my own reality, right? And like, there's a scientific study done stating that reality doesn't exist unless someone's watching, right? So if you know that, you can create your own reality. So you close your eyes, you know, literally when I wake up in the morning, my eyes are closed. Before I open my eyes, I create what I want to have that day. And then I open my eyes. And so that's how I tease the universe like that. So that, and I had a mentor once, you know, rest in peace. And Dr. Charles Oyster was his name. He's a British man who lived in Switzerland. And he was the oldest gold medal bodybuilder, 200 meter sprinter, rower, sculler, whatever. So he did all these masters. He started bodybuilding when he was 83, right? He died when he was 93. And I met him when he was like 85, 80, 86. And this guy told me, I said, man, what do you, cause he was clear. He was like he could talk like this at 85 years old, 90 years old, 92 years old. And I said, what is your secret? He goes, it's everyone says it's food, but it's not. I drink, you know, and it's having a purpose. It's having a purpose, Stephen, that will keep you young forever. Always be extending your goals. Always be setting new goals forward. And I don't mean like, I want a car, I want a bigger car, you know, like purposeful goals. And that's why I had to, that's actually why myself and my partner, Lane Ballone, who's the special forces guy who teaches, he's my full partner. We did a course called The Last Goal Setting Course You'll Ever Need. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. First, you find your identity, who you are, what's your purpose in life. Then you set goals. You set 5 goals for each area of your life for a total of 100 goals in this course for the next 30 years. And what happens is when you set goals for 30 years, it isn't like I want a car in 30 years. It's just like I'm going to have a house sometime between now and 30 years. I'm going to have a family between now and 30 years. So you're setting up the entire structure of your life, but not a timeline.
Right.
That's the cool thing about it. And here's why. Because if I'm focused on one thing like this, like I'm looking down tunnel vision, I'm not seeing what's left and right and up and down. And if you ask any successful person, Richard Branson or Bill Gates or whoever, they're going to tell you 30 to 50% of their success was coincidence and luck. So you don't see coincidence and luck if you're tunnel visioned at one goal, number one. Number two, if there's one goal that you have, let's say, for instance, you want a Bentley, right? And you save money for that Bentley and you buy a Bentley. Well, now you can't afford the insurance. You look like a knucklehead because you're wearing, I don't know, the wrong clothes or who knows what. Mm-hmm. Your goal should be the lifestyle of a person who can afford to drive and enjoy a Bentley. What does that include? And that's where the goals come in. People are like, 100 goals? Like, that's easy. What kind of a person would drive a Bentley? They got a lot of money. How much? Okay. How much do they make a month? What does their house look like? What color is carpet? How many people do they have in their family? Where do they live? You know, what's the house made out of? It's all these different things. Creating literally in this course a life of your own that you really, really want, right? And then we learn how to set habits and procedures and structures in your life to make sure you're always going toward those goals. And the goals cascade. As soon as you reach one goal, it morphs into another goal, morphs into another goal, morphs into another goal. And so we did this thing called habit stacking as well. So you take an old habit, put a new habit on top of it. For instance, every time you brush your teeth in the morning, you have your journal sitting beside your toothbrush because you know you'll forget it otherwise. That's called habit stacking. That's from Atomic Habits from James Clear, great book. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things we talk about is metaphysics, but we do it in a way like this right here. We don't talk about, you know, metaphysical or quantum physics and things like that, but that's basically what we're talking about. And from the 60 people that signed up with absolutely no marketing whatsoever, I'd say about 80% of them are just blown away at the success they have because of the lifestyle they've built through this. Identity, goals, procedures and structures, and go, cascading goals. It just goes. And so when you talk about staying young, my friend, that's how you stay young, because you always have something to look forward to. You're building something, you're creating new, you're helping others, you're giving back. That whole spectrum of what it means to be a human, it has little to do with what you get. Because when you give, you automatically get. When you give what you have, your time, your knowledge, whatever it is, you will always get back what you don't have.
Wow. That seems like it's the perfect, perfect type of course for somebody like who's the guy's listening, who's about 25 years old, getting out of the military, trying to figure out what they're going to do next.
It's exactly what it's for. And we actually tailored it to that situation for people who were out and sort of like, okay, what do we do now? And there's a Facebook group to go with it. You join the group. And the cool thing about it is the people who have gone through this course already are in that group. Mm-hmm. So they can help you along the way. And like I said, there's power in numbers. People who know what you know, entrepreneurs who are like you that have been through what you are yet to go through, you don't have to learn that. I always say, if there's someone where you want to be in life, go to them and ask them, how did you get here? Right. Why would I go to try to learn Facebook ads if I can find somebody to do it for me who wants to be my partner or be a collaboration partner? I do what I do for him. I help him with his business and he does my Facebook ads. Why would I try to learn it? Why would I try to do it myself? It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. If you're strong at something, you need to put everything you have into that strength and you outsource, delegate, collaborate, partnerships, joint ventures with people who are good at those things that you are bad at. Because you will never be a genius at that one thing if you're concentrating on your weaknesses all the time. Like people say, concentrate on your weaknesses, you know, 20-80, all that BS, right? It's not 20-80. Not at all. It's like 94-6.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No. You know, so, but don't get me wrong. You have to know your entire business. You have to know how it operates and you have to know how it runs and how it makes money and how you find all that. You need to know that, mm-hmm. but not in details. I don't need to know how to write and compute an IRR model, internal rate of return model, you know, or ROI model. I just need to know how to read it. You know what I'm saying? And say, something's wrong there. That doesn't look right. You know, the variables, you know, the variable costs or whatever, just keep moving to my whatever. And so that you need to know, I call that being a hitpreneur. So a hitpreneur, hit squad, hitpreneur, hit man, hit woman. A hitpreneur is that person who shows up, as I said, to wholly and freely, that knows their entire business 360 degrees, but is a genius in that one or two things that they do that just makes them like the baddest ass entrepreneur out there. And that's what we teach in this group. You start off with the immediate impact revenue program. You start out with a 30-day kickstart. And literally, I think it's like 65-minute videos or 4-minute videos or 3-minute videos that we just go through and we just say, this is what you got to do. This is how you do your branding. This is how you do your sales. These are 6 sales courses. Here's the marketing, da-da-da-da-da-da, all the way through for 30 days so that you come out on a platform ready to rock and roll, kill it. You know, it's so much fun, I'll tell you.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Especially for entrepreneurs that are like, man, I started, you know, I don't know what to do yet, but I feel like I'm there. Okay, move. We'll get you structured. We're going to get you moving, get you in a hot seat. You're going to grab some mentors out of the group and off you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because we live in such an amazing time right now to where you can literally start a business, you know, with practically nothing. Right? You can start a business with practically nothing, with an idea. And when you're looking for help out there and you're looking for to outsource, you could do it easier now than ever as well, you know, because of virtual assistants and everything, right?
Yeah. Well, look, I'm going to tell you the truth. I started my online business 15 months ago. Before that, I was an offline consultant traveling the world, Europe mostly, and you know, maybe twice a year to the States or 3 times a year to the States. And I was literally gone 4 days a week, mm-hmm. on an airplane 2 days a week. And it was like cool, right? But it sucked because I was away from my family. So I came home one day and I said, I'm done. I'm not going in. I can call my clients and I'm not coming anymore. And I said, you can do it with me online. They're like, we're not doing online. Who the heck are you? Would you come some kind of, you know, e-commerce dude? I'm like, nope. So they said, no. I said, all right. So I didn't know what to do. My wife's like, what do you do? I said, I have no idea. So I went to the veteran group, Vetpreneur Tribe, right? There was like 2,000 people there at the time. And I said, hey, how you doing? I'm Steven. I'm a business consultant. I've worked all over the world. I worked for Mick Jagger, Andrea Bocelli, Olivia Newton-John. I worked for politicians. I worked with NASDAQ, all this, you know, whatever it said. And I said, I'm here to help you. So this is what I'm going to teach you today. I'm going to teach you how to do marketing. I'm going to teach you how to do this. I'm going to teach you how to do that. And after 3 months, I had so many clients, I made 6 figures. Now, I didn't do any marketing. I didn't do any sales. I didn't do anything. All I did, and this is where the Hitpreneur comes in, was provide 100% free value in that group to the people who were listening. And those people who were listening took what I taught them, implemented it, or some of them, that's where the money came in, said, Steve, I love what you said. I don't want to do it myself. It's not my area of genius. Can you do it for me? And they paid me for it. Simple as that. So I help people scale their business, grow their business stuff. So there I was, made 6 figures in 3 months from zero, just from Facebook Lives. That's all I did, Facebook Live. So you tell me, is it possible to start a business without any money? Yeah. I just did it, right? So I did it. And since then, I've built it out and I still do the lives every day. Right? Mm-hmm. I take weekends off now since about 2 months, but I do them every single day. I have a morning purge. It's morning. It's like a minute video every morning, just to like jump up and purge. And then I do my business at nighttime. My business video at night.
Wow.
Yeah. And I still make money from it. So I make some of my living.
Wow. That's awesome.
So you don't need an investment. Look, everybody has that thing. Everybody has that. You know what I'm saying? It has that boom, has something that they're amazing at. It could be anything. It could be drawing, whatever it is. But if you are truly giving value from your place of genius and you're not expecting anything in return, you're not trying to sell anything, you're providing value, you're going to win. You're going to win every time. Promise you.
Exactly. And that's so important to remember. Everybody has something. Everybody does have something.
Yep.
Let me ask you this. You at 52, you look great. What are you doing to take care of yourself?
Well, remember, I live in Europe now. So I've lived here in Europe since 1993 when I got out, 1986 since I was in the army. And there's no GMO over here. There's no, you know, injections in the meat. There's no bovine. There's no none of that stuff, right? So first of all, the food's much healthier. Mm-hmm. Right? Second of all, I train, you know, almost every day since I was 14. That goal setting and a young wife and young kids and the zest for life and conquering more and seeing more and living more and loving. Look, I live in Europe. When I want to go out on the weekend, we go to Italy, we go to Croatia, we go to Vienna. It's a 2-hour drive away. Like we just booked this weekend today. Mm. So on the weekend, we're going to be in Vienna or in Austria for 2 days with the kids, you know, and this is what you can do. And it's going to cost me total for 2 days in Austria with the drive back and forth, less than $400. So it isn't like I'm some rich guy going around, you know, throwing money around. And so, yeah, that's how you stay young, man. You live life with a vengeance.
That's awesome. Yeah. Steven, let me ask you this. How can people find you? Where can they get in touch with your Hitpreneur program? And I know you had it was an SMS I signed up for during the call. If you wanted to put that out there as well.
Sure. So the SMS, you can actually go on my website, steven-kuhn.com, and you scroll down about halfway. It says 8 ways to create immediate impact revenue in your business. That's one. And at the top, you'll see resources. And you can click on resources and it'll say the last goal setting course and the immediate impact revenue program. I think a pop-up just was put on today. So there should be a pop-up as well for the immediate impact revenue program. I'd highly encourage any entrepreneur who's looking to start or to boost their business, turn it around, to take a look at it. It's ridiculous what you get for a program in there. Really ridiculous. And you have access to me on those Wednesdays. And of course, I'm in there chatting the whole time as well because I can't keep my fingers. I love seeing people succeed, right? Especially because when I know that I know, what I know that they don't know. And it's really easy, you know, because there's only three ways to grow a business. I think I said that in the speech, you know.
Yep.
That's more clients, higher prices, and repeat sales. That's the three ways to grow your business. The only three ways there is. Now, underneath those three ways are 35 other ways to grow your business. But, you know, there's like 15 ways to gain new clients. There's 15, you know what I'm saying? So, and when you know this, I walk into a business or I talk to somebody in their business and I look at what they're not doing. And I go, oh, do this and do that. Done. All right. Done. Let's go. You know, it's so gratifying. I love it. I love it.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Are you on social media, right? You're on social media. You're on Facebook. Are you on Instagram?
Yesterday, my whole Instagram with 16,000 followers was deleted. You see, I have someone copying my profile at least two or three times a week. So I report them every time, two or three times a week. And I guess they thought I was fake because they deleted my entire account. So my entire Instagram account where I've worked for with 2,000 posts is gone. I'm trying to get it back. But Facebook is Stephen Kuhn Official. Facebook, Stephen Kuhn Official. That's my business page. My private page is full of, I have 5,000 friends, so I'm like, I can't go over there anymore, but you can follow me on the business page, Stephen Kuhn Official. Twitter is Stephen E. Kuhn, Stephen E. Kuhn. Instagram is Stephen Eugene Kuhn. I have a small business one that I never built out that I'm now starting to build out. So Stephen Eugene Kuhn. And I think that's about it, right? Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, we'll get you posted across our channels on there. It stinks to have something like that deleted.
Yeah. You know, it happened for a reason. Like, see, this is what I'm talking about. I let go of stuff like that. If I can't change it, I got my Instagram guy. I'm like, you Instagram guy, can you go check it out? He's like, oh, I'll get back with you in a couple of days. Like, all right, see you, man. I don't worry about it. Right. So it's like, yeah, so what? It's supposed to happen. Who knows why? Maybe I'm supposed to learn a lesson like, hey, man, next time, take all those names down and put them in an Excel list or something. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. So it doesn't bother me. I lost a Rolex one time. I'm like, oh, I guess I wasn't supposed to have it. What are you going to do? You can't change it. It's raining. You're in a bad mood. I'm sorry, man. You're not going to change the rain by being in a bad mood. You might as well be happy.
Yeah. Right? No, absolutely. A lot of people worry too much about things they can't control at all. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, number one, I just want to acknowledge you. Like I said, first time I'd heard you was at that talk at Clever Talks. And then, you know, immediately after listening to your speech, I was really, really motivated. And in the weeks and months after that, I'd started my own new business and completely changed what I was doing. And I just, I loved what you talked about. I loved your presence on stage. And, you know, I love the fact that you're so, I hate using this word because it sounds cliche, but it's true. You're authentic. You know, you're truly putting yourself out there. You're not afraid to be vulnerable, and you're using it to help other people, using your story to help other people. And that's what I really appreciate about you, man.
Thank you so much. That's probably one of the best compliments I've ever gotten. So thank you. It really means a lot. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to see what our audience says about this episode. I know it's going to have a huge impact on everybody out there. And so
great.
Thank you for coming over and helping our community and thank you for your service and being a brother.
Amen, man. Thank you too. And thank you. I thank all your listeners. You guys hang in there, man. Life just keeps getting better. If you just, you know, follow that attitude that you create your own reality. And there's one thing I always say at the end of everything that I do, and that's, it's all about quality of life. In the end, right? That's what we got to go for. That's what we got to get, quality of life.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, again, Stephen, thank you so much. And to everybody out there, get after it. You know, go after that quality of life and get out there and live your best lives while you can. Talk to you guys next week. And we're